Federal Institute.
Welcome. You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the May 4, 2022 reading of the Environment Program. I'm Karen Wheeler, and today we will be reading the following main articles. An anaconda's playdate with dolphins took a strange turn. Written by Carolyn Wilkie for the Science section of the New York Times. Why You Should Care About the Insect Crisis. Written by Allie Wilkerson for ScienceNews.com. And one story to honor National Pet Week, which is May 1 through 7. Homeless shelters begin to see value in making room for pets. Written by Christopher Weber for the Associated Press. And of course, if we have time, following up with miscellaneous articles. First up, an anaconda's playdate with dolphins took a strange turn. By Carolyn Wilkie. August 2021. A research team was documenting biodiversity near the Tiwamuki River in Bolivia when they saw some animals that are typically difficult to observe. Bolivian river dolphins. Just seeing them with their heads above the river was extraordinary, according to Stefan Reichel, a biologist at the Noel Kampf Mercado Museum of Natural History in Santa Cruz de la Sierra Bolivia, and a member of the team. They knew something was up and started snapping photos. Only after scrolling through the images the team captured did the researchers realize the dolphins were dangling an anaconda around as they swam. The researchers described what they saw in the journal Ecology last month. While dolphins in captivity and the wild are known for being playful, the surprising behavior of the Bolivian cetaceans appears like a new frontier in frolicking among the aquatic mammals, and some scientists are not sure what to think about what the team observed. Dr. Reichel says Bolivian river dolphins usually swim below the surface, and sightings often catch only a fin or a tail. But some of the six animals they saw kept their heads above the turbid water for an unusually long time. At one point, two male dolphins seemingly swam in sync, a snake held by the animals' mouths. Anacondas are semi-aquatic and can hold their breaths for some time. But because the snake was handled for at least 7 minutes, much of this submerged, it probably perished.
I don't think the snake had a very good time, Dr. Reichel said.
Because of how long this interaction went on, the team suspects play, not predation. Bolivia's native Beni anacondas are apex predators. Other than a single case of cannibalism, researchers haven't documented the serpents being eaten. In this case, the team did not see where the snake ended up. With how lively dolphins are, quote, playing seems like a pretty good answer, said Omar Entiospe Nito, one of the paper's authors and a taxonomist at Universidad Federal do Rio Grande do Sul in Brazil. Some of the dolphins gathered were juveniles, which could suggest another dimension of the interaction. The adults may have been teaching the youngsters about anacondas or showing them a hunting technique. But Sonia Wild, a behavioral ecologist at Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior in Germany, who was not part of the study, was skeptical that the interaction was purposely instructive. It's more plausible the juveniles were observing because they were curious, she says. And because anacondas are strong, Dr. Wild wonders if the snake was injured or dead before the dolphins got to it.
Of all the things one could pick up, quote, "This seems a little extraordinary," she said. "This is the first time I've heard of dolphins playing with a large snake," added Dr. Wild, who has observed bottlenose dolphins using shells as tools. Something else from the photos was notable: the male dolphins' erect penises. It could have been sexually stimulating for them, said Diana Reese, a marine mammal scientist and cognitive psychologist at Hunter College in New York, who also was not involved with the study. It could have been just something to rub on. The aroused males could have been having a sexual romp with each other before the snake became entangled. Researchers who study dolphins are well aware of the animal's sexual proclivities, such as rubbing their genitals on toys or their penises on objects animate and inanimate. They often use their penises for tactile interactions, according to Dr. Reese. "There are so many questions," Mr. Entiuspe Nitu says. A lot more is known about ocean-dwelling dolphins than riverine ones, in part because it's harder to see what's going on when river water is so muddy. Even though they're limited in nature, quote, "these observations are always valuable," according to Dr. Reese. "It's giving us another glimpse of the lives of these animals, particularly in the wild. Whatever happened in this animal encounter, it's definitely not the stuff of children's storybooks." Why You Should Care About the Insect Crisis, by Allie Wilkerson. Imagine a world without insects. You might breathe a sigh of relief at the thought of mosquito-free summers, or you might worry about how agriculture will function without pollinators. What you probably won't picture is trudging through a landscape littered with feces and rotting corpses. What a world devoid of maggots and dung beetles would look like. That's just a snippet of the horrifying picture of an insect-free future that journalist Oliver Millman paints in the beginning of his new book, The Insect Crisis: The Fall of the Tiny Empires That Run the World. The loss of insects would be an agonizing ordeal eclipsing any war and even rivaling the looming ravages of climate breakdown, he writes. And yet, the threat of an impending insect apocalypse doesn't get nearly the same level of attention as climate change. Researchers have been observing declining insect populations for decades. For instance, a study of nearly 40 years of data from a protected rainforest in Puerto Rico found that insect biomass had decreased by 98% on the ground and 80% in the canopy since the mid-1970s. The threats insects face are many: light pollution, the increasing use of pesticides, and climate change are just a few. And it's not only rare species that are at risk. It's also species that were once common around the globe. The reality of the crisis isn't as foreboding as Millman initially makes it seem. A world with no insects is unlikely, he acknowledges. Studies have found that while some species are in decline, others, such as freshwater insects, are doing fine. Rather than viewing the insect crisis as all insect populations on one downward-trending line on a graph, Millman suggests picturing a lot of different lines, some holding steady, some sloping up or down, and some zigzagging. Insects are being shifted to an unhappy state where there will be far more bedbugs and mosquitoes and far fewer bumblebees and monarch butterflies, he writes. Those changes in biodiversity come with consequences. Farmers may have to fend off more pests that attack soybeans, for instance, and insect-pollinated fruits and vegetables will become hard to grow at scale. Some insect-eating animals will decline as their food disappears, which has already happened to some birds, or they may even vanish. Water and soil quality could also be in jeopardy. Milman investigates the crisis by sharing his own adventures with insects, along with those of researchers. Taking readers from the United States to Mexico, across the Atlantic to Europe, and all the way to Australia. By sharing scientists' stories, he makes the plight of insects personal. There's a researcher in Denmark who has spent 25 years surveying insect populations by driving his old Ford Anglia down the same country roads and counting the number of bugs squashed on the windshield. Back when he started, he'd regularly have to clean insect guts off his car, but in recent years, he has experienced a lot of, quote, zero insect days. As I read that, I struggled to remember the last time I had to scrape any dead insects off my car. Another researcher recalls the joy of catching fireflies on his family ranch in Texas as a child. I felt a wave of sadness as I thought about how I don't see fireflies as much as I did when I was a kid. With more street lights and the switch to LED bulbs, it's becoming harder for fireflies to spot potential mates. Amid the doom and gloom, the book still manages to spark awe and delight with fun facts about insects. Bumblebee wings, for instance, vibrate so fast that they can produce gravitational forces of up to 50 G's. 5 times greater than what fighter jet pilots experience. Milman also offers hope, sharing how certain insects are adapting to the threats and how some people are fighting to protect the critters through political campaigns and changing farming habits. By the book's end, readers may find that their attitude toward some insects has shifted from loathing to love, or, at the very least, appreciation. I, for one, never cared much for flies until I learned we wouldn't have chocolate without them. Milman makes clear how much we benefit from insects and what we stand to lose without them. As one researcher puts it, our deeply woven reliance on insects is like the Internet. When parts of the network are removed, the less Internet there is, until, quote, eventually it doesn't work anymore. A world without the Internet would be difficult but livable. The same can't be said for a world without insects. The book is The Insect Crisis by Oliver Milman and is available from bookshop.org and is also available at your local library in print or audio form. And now one story to honor National Pet Week, May 1 through 7. Homeless shelters begin to see value in making room for pets, by Christopher Weber. Being homeless in Los Angeles and struggling with addiction is hard enough, but Rachel Niebuhr couldn't imagine enduring it without her dog, Petey. Niebuhr credits her constant companion, an energetic black and white Chihuahua mix, with helping her stay off drugs and giving her a reason to get up in the morning. "She needs me. She gives me focus. I have to feed her. I have to walk her. It's a real relationship," said Niebuhr, before following Petey to the small fenced-in dog park on the grounds of the shelter in the Venice neighborhood where the inseparable pair have lived for about 2 years. Traditional homeless shelters have long been off-limits to pets, leaving animal owners who want to get off the streets with a difficult choice. But as homelessness surges across the United States, those working toward a solution are increasingly recognizing the importance pets have for vulnerable populations and are looking for ways to keep owners and pets together. When given the choice between getting shelter or giving up their pet, unhoused people will almost always choose to remain on the streets, according to Tim Huxford, the associate director of the Venice facility, now home to Niebuhr and Petey. So we always want to reduce the number of barriers that we have for people in bringing them off the street, he said. We realize that pets are family to people. The Venice shelter operated by the nonprofit People Assisting the Homeless, or PATH, was the first of its kind in Los Angeles County to allow residents to bring animal companions, according to Huxford. Thanks to a state grant, PATH has a budget for food, crates, toys, and veterinary services under an initiative called the Pet Assistance and Support Program. In 2019, the pilot program provided $5 million to nonprofits and local jurisdictions, and that amount was doubled the following year. Now, pending legislation would make the grant program permanent, while expanding it across the state. State Senator Robert Hertzberg, who wrote the bill that would expand the program, estimates that about 10% of homeless Californians have pets. And the reason many shelters don't accept animals is simply because they don't have resources to care for them, said Hertzberg, a dog owner. He called pets, quote, our comfort, and cited research that found animals provide companionship and a sense of purpose to people who don't have housing. The Democrat from Los Angeles said it's just, quote, raging common sense to give nonprofits and other caregivers the budgets they need to feed and house pets, especially considering how much California already allocates to address the statewide homeless crisis. We're spending $1 billion over here to get people off the street. Why can't we spend a few dollars over there to put together veterinary services and dog food and crates? These are grants of between $100,000 and $200,000, so it's not a ton of money in the grand scheme of things, Hertzberg said. The money would come from the state's general fund, so it's not cutting into any existing funding, according to Hertzberg. The measure, SB 513, unanimously passed the state Senate in January and now awaits consideration in the Assembly. The California law is part of a larger national recognition of the issue. In Arizona, for example, there are several organizations that take care of animals for residents who are struggling to get back on their feet. A nonprofit no-kill shelter called Lost Our Home provides up to 90 days of pet care for homeless people while they search for a permanent place to live following a crisis like eviction, domestic violence, or medical treatment. Don Kitch manages one of several shelters operated in the Phoenix area by the nonprofit Family Promise, among the few that allow people to keep their pets at a separate area for the animals at the site. He said the shelter was currently housing 4 dogs, 2 cats, and a guinea pig. Unfortunately, there are very few facilities around here that will accept pets, said Kitch. He said many shelters do allow service animals and, less frequently, emotional support animals. Kitch said the Arizona Humane Society takes in pets for 90 days to allow their owners time to find stable housing, while the Sojourner Center allows domestic violence victims to keep their pets at the shelter. Kitch said Family Promise used a grant from PetSmart to get started with its program to house pets. He said he'd welcome a law like California's because, quote, anything to defray the cost would be ideal for a nonprofit homeless shelter like ours. The national nonprofit Best Friends Animal Society has joined forces with Catholic Charities USA to push for programs that keep homeless people and their pets together. The group Feeding Pets of the Homeless organizes veterinary clinics and donation drives for pet food and supplies. The ASPCA and other animal care groups are urging the California bill's passage. The ASPCA believes that financial circumstances or loan are not reliable indicators of the capacity to love and care for a companion animal, and that pets are incredible sources of support and companionship in our lives, especially during times of stress and uncertainty, said Susan Riggs, the ASPCA's Senior Director of Housing Policy. One of Petey's canine companions at the Venice Path facility is Champ, a pit bull mix whom his owner, Ro Mantooth, calls the mascot of the shelter. "He's really my best friend. I don't know what I'd do without him," Mantooth, 29, said of Champ. "I'm lucky to have him. Not a lot of places are going to take animals, you know." In addition to Petey and Champ, there are 8 other dogs and 1 cat at the Venice shelter. Huxford said another PATH facility has a parrot in a cage. "Technically, there are no rules about what animals can be admitted," he said, "but that hasn't been tested yet. If someone came in with an elephant, well, I guess we'd have to see," he said. And now one short item from the current issue of Solutions, newsletter of the Environmental Defense Fund. Surprise comeback possible for cleared forests. The world's tropical forests sequester vast amounts of carbon and are key to the fight against climate change. These forests are rapidly disappearing, and while it's critical to preserve those that remain, a major new study provides hope that some tropical forest lands that were cleared and then abandoned can renew themselves. These so-called secondary forests, the study found, can regenerate their plant species diversity in 25 to 60 years, though it may take a century or more to recover the full biomass of a mature forest. This suggests conserving degraded forests and encouraging large-scale regeneration of cleared lands in tropical countries could be an important natural climate solution. Also from the Environmental Defense Fund, all in favor say climate. Every year, Henrico High School in Henrico, Virginia, hosts a model UN conference organized and led by the school's students. The conference simulates a session of the United Nations General Assembly, during which student delegates from area schools debate the major issues of the day. This year, the theme of the event, which included some 200 delegates, was the fight for the future, and climate change was the key issue. The student leaders also used the event to raise charitable donations for a single organization. This year, they chose the Environmental Defense Fund and raised more than $1,000 from students and conference sponsors. "We loved the EDF's way of creating solutions with the help of science, economics, partnerships, and advocacy," says Sanvi Tantineni, an Enrico senior and one of the conference leaders. Thank you for joining us for the May 4, 2022 reading of the Environment Program. I'm Karen Wheeler.